had to convince them that, you know, that's not enough, that you really need Digestial, which covers everything, but you're just not going to get enough of the probiotics in a yogurt. And usually the yogurt's going to have too much sugar in it anyway. So you can't rely on yogurt to get your enough probiotics, prebiotics, and all the other stuff you need. So,
you know what? It's actually an interesting point. I think that's kind of a common thing with supplements and vitamins. You know, man, I've heard so often people thinking they're getting their probiotics from something like Greek yogurt or whatever. And same thing with, like, you know, vitamin C through, you know, emergency, which is still good. You're not quite going to get enough. And I think one argument you make really well in a lot of your content is you need the right amounts and you need the right forms of it. That's interesting about the yogurt thing. I've heard that too.
I heard you talking about that interview I did with the Children's Health Defense, and I'm not sure you can pull it up if you look that up, but I'm not sure we can play it through a media like this, because it'll probably get pulled, because
don't say why.
But I will say this, I was pretty honest.
What
I thought happened. And so, so it's, if you want to listen to it, you could probably pull it up through the Children's Health Defense Fund.
Shout out to Children's Health Defense. That was such a great organization. And Kathy, let us know, was Doc honest in that interview? What was your perception? I see Kathy watched the interview. Kathy knows. There we go. Cool. Thank you, Kathy, so much. Let's see here, guys. We're taking questions tonight. I see Roel's in the building. What's up, Roel? Great to see you as always. If you guys got a question for Doc, we're taking them. Here's what Kathy said.
Yeah, I kind of did.
All right, guys, we're taking questions. If you're over on Instagram, I see Tanya's over here. Sarah, what's up? We are taking questions in the comments. So if you have a question, go ahead and put it in the comments. We'll get to everyone tonight. thanks. Thank you, Carter. Exactly. Doc, you about ready, man?
Yeah, sure.
All right, we're going to jump into some questions. Let's see here. Question about lowering and stabilizing blood pressure. Which supplements do you like for lowering and stabilizing blood pressure? And Doc, before you get to that, I'm going to give you some context. Blood pressure seems to jump around a lot, from being lower most of the time, 120 to 140, to much higher at the doctor's or dentist's office, at 160 or 180. Goes on to say, as long as it does return to normal, is it okay, or should it not be having those high spikes? I'll let you talk to that, because I know this listener is not the only person, because you guys are looking at one whose blood pressure goes up.
Yeah, more. Really, there's really no accurate blood pressure medicine at any one point in time. Really, to be accurate, you'd have to do a 24-hour blood pressure monitor, and they're hard to get a hold of, because, you know, just a spot blood pressure doesn't mean a ton. And sure, it's going to be up at different times. It's going to jump around all the time. Everybody's does. And when you're nervous, it's definitely going to be higher. So I encourage everybody. I told a patient today this, get your own monitor and check it at your house. If there's some family history of it, or it's been noted to be high at your doctor's office or at a pharmacy or wherever you check it. There's no doubt that you shouldn't base, or commit yourself to a blood pressure medicine based on one or two, you know, borderline high numbers at your doctor's office. So, a lot of times I'll initially get one, I'll take it, after we've already finished the visit, and it's usually a lot lower. So get yourself your own monitor. So that's not unusual at all. But you do have to watch it, because, you know, some people's blood pressure, it is a risk factor. It's a major risk factor for heart disease and stroke. So you need to know what it is. And unfortunately, we can't get 24-hour blood pressure monitors done. We just can't do it. So frequent checking of it when you're at home, relaxed. And certainly if it comes down most of the time, then that's normal. But some supplements that I like are berberine, which I talk about berberine all the time. You know, it's great for cholesterol. It's great for weight loss. It's great for blood pressure and lowers your blood sugars. It's probably as effective as metformin without the GI side effects. Remember to get the dihydroberberine, though. It's five times more potent with virtually no side effects. And you can use a lot lower dose of it. But I like hawthorn. I like garlic peels. Those are probably my favorite ones. Sometimes I use the stress adrenal adaptogens if it seems like you're stressed out all the time. You know, you can check your cortisol curve to look at that. But those are probably my favorite. I'll probably have left one or two out. You know, I told a guy today that he needs to be taking daily Cialis for many reasons. One is blood pressure lowering effect because it releases nitric oxide, and so does L-citrulline, L-arginine. But I like exercise too. I mean, exercise reduces your blood pressure. A good night's sleep helps. Not having sleep apnea or treating sleep apnea will help. You know, sleep apnea is one of the major causes of hypertension. I don't, you know, if I have to use a medication, which I frequently do on people, I don't like lisinopril. I took somebody off of that today. I just think there's way better things than lisinopril for several reasons. But so I hope that helps you, you know, but yeah, get your own blood pressure monitor.
It's a great question. And real quick, one, I want to give a shout out to Margo, our PA in the Fountain City office, which is where I'm at. And Margo did just such a fantastic job this past weekend at the Women's Health. Help me, Margo. Women's Health. It's not Women's Health Initiative because that's not what it is. It was a event in Knoxville and hosted by Crunchy Mama. I hope some of you guys are here. It was such a fun. I saw it through pictures, and we had a whole bunch of our team was there. But Margo did fantastic. Margo, let me know what that.
That's what I heard. I heard she blew it out, and it was just a wonderful conference. I missed it. I was supposed to go, but couldn't go at the last minute. But Jenny went and said it was fantastic.
Yeah, super.
And Robin and Margo blew it out and did such a good job. It was an impressive. I've looked at the syllabus and I got the book, and it was an impressive.
That's right.
Assortment of women. I mean, it was really impressive.
It was super cool, Margo. Thank you. The Wellness Innovation Summit. I think they're going to be doing this every year. It was just this past weekend, and Margo just did an absolute job. I believe your topic was hormones, thyroid, you know, functional medicine, which is what we're all about. So, Margo, thank you so much. I see Andy's question. I see Lisa's question. Thank you. I'm gonna get to Johnny's here real quick, just because one, we have our online vitamin shop, which maybe is where you got it, Johnny. Dr. Rogers, I bought your super vitamin, and it tends to make me nauseated. When is best time to take these, and is there a time in the evening that is too late to take them so it doesn't interfere with sleep? I love this. This is one of the big ambitions of this show, is to ask some of these specific questions around the things that we talk about all the time. Okay, cool, Johnny. Cool, in the Kingsport office. So, Doc, real quick, because I know you get this quite a bit with the super, because it's potent. A very potent multivitamin. Go ahead and help Johnny out.
Yeah, it's not too unusual. Number one, you have to take it with food because it has zinc in it. Zinc seems to be the thing that really gets some people nauseated out of any mineral, zinc. So number one, do not take it on an empty stomach. It is loaded. Some people even get a little nauseated with B vitamins. But I find that it's loaded. And again, you couldn't get all that stuff you have in it in one pill. So it's three different smaller capsules. So what I do personally, because I'm sensitive to those things too, especially zinc. If I took even one of my supers out of the three on an empty stomach, I would have a little nausea with it. So take it with food, especially a fatty food, because remember there's fat soluble vitamins in there as well. But what I do, I eat two meals a day at lunch and supper. So I usually take two with lunch and one with supper. Whichever really is the biggest meal of the day. And you could take it at night, but take it with a little something to eat. So split it up is the main thing, because it's a very potent multivitamin. You're going to get your money's worth out of that vitamin, but it's pure. It has no fillers in it. So try that and see. And if you can't take them, we'll take them back from you, believe me. But look at the ingredients and how many milligrams you're getting of that. And, hopefully you're not having a lot of other stomach problems. If you are, maybe, take a digest shield as well. But spread them out and take them with food, especially a fatty meal.
And that's what I wanted you to hear, Johnny, is Doc's strategy, because he tends to get a little nauseous with the zinc as well. So it's two with the biggest meal and then one at another meal that kind of spreads out the three. So, Johnny, I hope that helps, man. Okay, real quick with this blood pressure question over email, I just got this, and I want to help this this listener out. And I'm looking at around the Berberine Max. They're interested in that, and it's there's a couple blood pressure. Okay, the question is, I'm very interested in taking Berberine. I take blood pressure medicine and blood thinner. What are the adverse effects in taking these all together? So the question's around Berberine plus blood pressure medication and blood thinner. You got any thoughts on that, Doc?
Yeah. If you're on blood pressure medications, certainly there's no contraindication to Berberine, but just watch your blood pressure, because it does work. It'll lower your blood pressure somewhat, but usually not to a point where it's going to be anywhat dangerous. But, see how you're feeling. If you get up suddenly and you feel dizzy, you're getting orthostatic hypotension. So measure your blood pressure. Like I say, keep a cuff at home and measure it when you're sitting and then standing up and see if it drops. If it does, we may need to lower your blood pressure medicine, or even better, maybe you'd be able to get off of it. If you don't need it anyway, if you can take supplements, you'd much rather do that than take, the other prescription blood pressure medicines that have way more side effects. Now the Berberine also with blood thinners, you're probably not taking Coumadin. If you are taking Coumadin, there's not contraindicated to any blood thinner, but if you're taking Coumadin, just watch your pro times. With Coumadin's the one we don't use much anymore, unless you have a mechanical heart valve, but, another word for it's warfarin. It's actually rat poison, but some people have to take it. It used to be the only one we really had orally. But so if you're on that, then, watch your pro times. But, with anything you add, if you're on a blood thinner, just kind of see if you start bruising easier or having problems like that. But it's not contraindicated with something like Eliquist, which is the most common one that we see. So I'll bet that's what you're on.
Thank you for that explanation here. Thank you for that question that came in through email. Questions like this are perfect for the show. Thank you so much. I see 606 Mal, what's up on Instagram? Zach Hill, what's up? Brandy C., what's going on? Thank you guys for hanging out with us over on Instagram. If you have a question for Doc, put in the comments and we'll be sure to get to that. Next one is, let's see here. We talked a little bit recently about, kind of what to add to a traditional lipid panel. Question is it the ApoB lab test that I should add to the traditional lipid panel? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, definitely. We check the ApoB as well as the LP little a on the Cleveland, as well as the size of your HDL particles, size of your LDL particles. Yeah, I mean, ApoB is much more accurate than just doing an LDL C, which is what most doctors measure: total HDL C and LDL C. HDL good cholesterol, LDL's the bad cholesterol. It's kind of a term that's not the greatest, but in general. But the ApoB is really more accurate because it measures all the quote bad forms of cholesterol, all the, like, not only just the LDL particle, but also the intermediate sized particles, the chylomicrons. And there's one else that checks one other particle, but think of ApoB as being a carrier of cholesterol, because cholesterol and water do not mix. So cholesterol, to be transported, has to have a lipoprotein. And so think of ApoB as like a taxi that carries all the kind of dangerous particles around in your bloodstream. And it can attach and get into cells through receptors. And the ApoB is really the most representative one that will cause plaque. So overall, the ApoB is, out of all the lipid measurements, that's probably the most important one. Mm. Even your HDL lipid theory is kind of blowing apart a little bit. Again, we try to say the high HDL is a good thing, but it's almost really, it can be good and bad because it's almost like a U-shaped, on a U-shaped curve. It can be, it's usually better when it's higher, but if it's too high, it can be deleterious. And certainly if it's too low, it's deleterious. So lipidology is a very complex subject. It really goes kind of deep. Like I say, you know, the triglycerides are really important too, as well as the one I was thinking of, the very low density lipoproteins, the chylomicrons, the intermediate density, and the triglycerides. So you have to, the ApoB kind of represents all those, and certainly something we measure and we do things to bring it down if you have other risk factors, but it's not on a standard lab. You have to kind of ask for it, and hopefully your doctor knows what it is. The LDL or the LP little a is another one that we measure, which is more of a genetically determined bad form of LDL. So I hope that wasn't too complex a measurement, but yes, it's a very good test to get, very accurate as far as to what's happening with your lipids. And again, sometimes the ApoB will mirror what your LDL-C number is, but sometimes not. Sometimes you have a discordance, and you can have somebody with a totally normal LDL, but yet their ApoB will be really high. And that needs to come down, because that's the danger one. The ApoB is the bad one. Mm. Yeah, but it's a representative of several of them, these carriers, these sticky particles that can cause plaque in your arteries.
That's a great question. Part of what we want to do here is help you guys with how to approach your next doctor's visit, and labs are a big part of that. So thank you, Doc, for that answer. Thank you for that question that came in through email. Real quick, because this kind of has to do with what we've been talking about the first half of the show. Can you elaborate? This is from Lisa. Thank you, Lisa, for kind of teeing this up for us. Can you elaborate on lisinopril? What is better? Yeah. What do you not like about this one? I'm on it, so very interested. So this is super timely. Lisa's talking about, you mentioned you didn't love lisinopril.
It used to be kind of the go-to back when we first started doing it many, many years ago. It's called an ACE inhibitor. But the thing about it, some people that take lisinopril are extremely allergic to it. And they have this thing called angioedema. after the first dose or two, and they end up in the emergency room getting intubated. It's almost like having an anaphylactic reaction on your face. And as a matter of fact, I talked to one of the anesthesiologists a month or two ago about how many times they'd been called to the emergency room to come in and save somebody's life that started taking lisinopril. The ER doc couldn't intubate them. There's so much edema. So I wouldn't want to take that chance. The other reason I don't like lisinopril is because it also has about a 30% cough rate, dry cough. When somebody comes into me with an unexplained dry cough that's been going on for months or years, I always ask them, are you taking a blood pressure medicine? And sometimes, yeah, I'm taking lisinopril. I've been on it for years. Well, stop it and let's put you on something better. The other reason is because we have the ARBs, the ARBs, angiotensin receptor blockers that are much better, much safer. So, and they also have that protective effect against diabetes effects on your liver, on your kidney. So people think all diabetics should have lisinopril. Really, they should have an ARB like losartan or one of those, or ibosartan, or, you know, there's several sartans. So I definitely think it's better. I don't think anybody that looks into it can kind of argue that now. Lisinopril is dirt cheap, but I just don't want to take the chance. I never start anybody on it anymore. I try to switch them over if I can.
Now, for those, you know, including Lisa, it seems, who are on lisinopril, and after what you just said, may, you know, be interested in changing strategies here. What's kind of the thought process there? Is this something
you see your doctor? I mean, again, you know, unless I am your doctor and treating you, talk to your doctor. These are my, switch me over.
And you're saying what?
And they'll be glad to. They'll be glad to. Unless they've got some kind of bug up their butt and don't want to take advice from a patient or concerns from a patient, which you do find. I mean, like I've always told you, doctors get arrogant. And, you know, if your doctor won't listen to you, your concerns, and get a new doctor. You know, any doctor that, if you went in there on lisinopril, hey, I'm concerned about this, I want to switch to an ARB, and they say, I'm not doing it, then find a new doctor. You're not going to be able to work with that doctor. For other things, that'd be a big red flag to me is, hey, I'm going to get a doctor that actually listens to me. So yeah, just talk to your doctor. They should be happy to do it. If they're not, find a new doctor.
There you go. I love that. Lisa, thank you. I hope that helps a little bit. We're going to get back to questions that came in through email. This one is around the Tdap. Going out of the country soon, not sure when I last had a tetanus shot. Should I get it again just in case it has been over 10 years? And then it goes on to say, what if it were only 6 years, so hasn't been 10 years? Would this be bad since it also contains the other two vaccines? Traditional doc here says get it, even though he knows I don't do everything he says. So let's get back to this first part here. What's your thoughts on this?
I'm not worried about it. You know, I don't think you need to, especially if you got it 6 years ago. I mean, you know, I've been practicing 38 years. I've never seen a case of tetanus or diphtheria. I used to see pertussis back when I saw a lot of kids. And, you know, you hear, well, maybe it's coming back a little bit with adults, pertussis. But I don't, you know, personally, I'm not going to get one. It's been over 10 years since I've had a tetanus shot. I'm not getting any more. Again, this is I'm telling you my opinion. You know, and everybody makes their own decisions, but I don't know how old you are.
But about going out of the country?
Yeah, you're fine. I mean, unless it's somehow required and you have to get it to go out of the country, fine. But, you know, if you're going out of the country, you come back with tetanus, I'll be shocked. Now, you do have to check with the health department like if you're going to Africa, you may need some, you know, prophylactic vaccines, like yellow fever, typhoid, some of those, you're going to have to get them. And you should probably also take some malaria prophylaxis if you're going to some of those countries, which is a pill. But, you know, I wouldn't freak out about it at all. You know, you're paranoid about it. You certainly do it, but and again, you're probably not going to have a problem with it. But you know, I just don't see that the need for it. To be honest with you, unless there's some kind of warning, which country you're going to, you can't get in without having a current DPT, then you can. But you know, if it was me, I probably wouldn't. You know, I'm just a little leery. You know,
that's a great question. Thank you.
Especially after I read that book, Vaccinated, Unvaccinated. That's a great book by Dr. Hooker,
who did the interview.
With the
Children's Health Defense.
I'm not really an anti-vaxxer, but the more I learn about some of these vaccines, the less eager I am to go get vaccinated with all this different stuff. So do your own research, and that's kind of my take on it.
All right. Thank you for that question. Let's real quick. I want to put this up from Lisa, but in regards to the lisinopril, because this is super helpful. From Lisa here, I did switch to Herbosatin. Am I saying that right? Herbosatin for a while, but it didn't seem to control my blood pressure as well as lisinopril. So it seems like the lisinopril is just working better for Lisa there. So thank you, Lisa, for putting this up.
You know, one thing I found out about the ARBs, like ibosertin, losartan, you have to work their dose up a little bit higher than the starting dose. You know, because they're milder, they have less side effects. Now, if you're a diabetic and totally the ARBs don't work for you and you've had no problem with lisinopril, then I'm okay with it. I mean, you know, sometimes you don't want to change your winning game plan. So that's possible.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple people like that. You know, you could also switch to something else if you wanted. A lot of them tend to have a lot of side effects too, whether it be a diuretic like ACTZ, which I totally don't like because it inflames your arteries, depletes your minerals. You could go to a calcium channel blocker like amlodipine, but it can cause side effects at higher doses too. So then you could get on a beta blocker depending on your cardiac status. But sometimes they can make you tired as well. So maybe look at the dose of ibosartan, or, you know, again, if you're doing great and not, you know, your blood pressures are fantastic, you may be diabetic or pre-diabetic and need either an ACE or an ARB, then, don't worry about it if you're not coughing or anything. And you probably, if you've been on it, you're not going to get the angioedema. That's the new starts.
Yeah.
But so, you know, take that for what it's worth. So, you know, I'm glad you certainly expounded on that a little bit.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for that. Great context there. And you know, that's so true. Like, don't change a winning game plan. If something's really working for you, you know, no matter what, you know, we're saying up here, if it's working, there's no need to change anything. That's,
you know, when I play pickleball, if my drop shot's working, I stay with it. You know, if my drop shot's not working, I'm hitting the net, then I'll start doing power shots. So kind of, you always change a losing game plan, but if you're winning, don't change it.
Well, one thing I know, since I've played with you a couple times, I've never seen your drop shot work. So, I'd tell you to make a change, to make a change.
You haven't been with me when it works. Sometimes it does work. Usually playing against older players, though. You know, you're on the younger side. You're a great tennis player. So maybe against you it doesn't work. But against some of my older folks that I play with, they can't get to my drop shots, especially if I angle them off. They can't get it. Well, then I'll lob it over their head if they do rush up to the net and try to get it. They should be at the net anyway, but then if I just pop it over their heads, they can't backpedal. They're too old. They can't, you know, they're going to tear something. So,
well, I'll be looking out for this. I haven't seen it work yet, but hey, you know, if it's working when I'm not there, keep doing it.
It works with the old folks. It works with the old folks. Yeah.
Guys, we are taking live health and wellness questions tonight, and apparently some pickleball questions as well. If you guys have a question for Doc, go ahead and put it in the comments. We're going to get to as many possible here over the next 20, 30 minutes. Let's see where we're at. Let's go ahead and get to...
They call a drop shot a dink in pickleball, too. Not a drop shot. It's called a dink.
And I think maybe Andy Carter's already answered this. It's tough for me to tell in my dashboard, but we'll go ahead and talk about it because I know you're probably not the only one who's dealt with this before. I was prescribed BHRT. I was afraid to take it. Is it okay to go ahead and use? It's been 6 months. Does it go bad? And I think it's the cream is what I'm seeing.
Yeah. I don't know what Carter said, but number one, don't be afraid to take it. I mean, these hormones are fine. They're safe. They are not going to cause cancer or heart disease. They'll protect you against it. But yeah, I would go ahead, and even if the expiration date's a little late on it, you know, you've got a month's worth, use it. I mean, it may lose a little bit of its potency. It may, but, you know, still it's not going to hurt you. If it was me, I would, you know, I'm the common sense doctor. You know, I'm not going to be so strict that say, no, if it's expired in May, you know, in March of 2024, don't take it. No, go ahead and take it. That's, you know, save your money, use that up, and then get your refill next month.
Andy, Margaret, I hope that helps. Thank you for putting that in there. Let's see here where we're at. Gosh, great questions are coming in tonight. Thank you guys so much. If you guys have a question, go ahead and put it in the comments. I'll do my best to not lose my place like I just did. Let's see. Real quick, let's do this. Let's talk about the methylene blue. I think this might have been answered around the I want to learn how to take methylene blue. There are different strategies. There's tablets as well as the drops. So for Sandy here, how would you kind of initially coach somebody to start off taking methylene blue?
Well, you know, in going through and been using it for a while personally and with a ton of patients and getting feedback and going to conferences, listening to lectures and everything, you know, we were probably underdosing it at first. It's very safe. Even if you're taking an SSRI, which don't work in the first place, it's safe to take. But generally, I tell people to take, you can take it once or twice a day. Most people take it once a day. They take it about 11 o'clock in the morning. In talking to a lot of people and experimenting with myself, that's what I do. And I take 16 drops in a glass of water at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I take it with a vitamin C. You know, if you get the pills, the vitamin C is in there. But I do the drops just because I titrate it and it's cheaper and I like it. I like that blue tone that I get with it. And, if I travel, I take the pills. If you don't feel any better, more energy, better breathing, I mean, there's so many different benefits of it, then I'll go up to 32 drops once a day, which is 16 milligrams. It's a half milligram per meal. So I think Andy does 32 drops a day. You know, it'll definitely give you energy. The thing I like about methylene blue, which there's so many things I love about it, it's just, it gives you energy. It gives you focus and quick. I mean, you don't have to take it for a month like you do some of these peptides, a month or two. You can notice it within a day or two that you're feeling better. At least I can. If you don't, then you need to go up on the dose. You could even go way higher than that. You know, if you're taking it, if you're giving it to an Alzheimer's patient, so I would go way higher than that.
I'm going to put this up from Carter in regards to the tablets. This is, it says take two, but we recommend starting at taking one to start out and staying at that dose. Thank you, Carter, for putting that in there. I think that's for the tablets, the tablet form. I think it's called NeuroPro is a tablet form of the methylene blue.
And don't take it at night because, you know, it really focuses you and wakes you up. You know, it may interfere with your sleep if you took it, you know, late afternoon or nighttime.
Thank you, Carter, for putting that in there. And thank you for that question, Sandy. Hope that helps a little bit. Let's get to Ruth. How are you liking the Urolithin A?
It's MitoPure. That's a substance that I started taking. I haven't really noticed a ton yet. I take it on an empty stomach in the morning. And, you know, I'm the kind of person who I'm conservative. So, it says take two. I'm just taking one. I don't know. I haven't noticed a dramatic difference in it, you know. So stay tuned, you know.
How long have you been on it?
We'll see. A month.
Month.
A little over a month, probably. It's Mitogen, MitoPure. I think it has a couple, but that's the active ingredient in it. It's really supposed to promote longevity, energy, and things like that. There may be, and it's expensive. I think it's about $100 a bottle. So it's an expensive thing to take. I think the main promoter of that supplement's Elon Musk's mom.
Really?
And yeah, so he probably loaned her the money to buy it, I bet. He can probably afford it.
great question there.
Thank you for asking that.
Thank you, Ruth. We'll keep you, it seems like we'll keep you posted on that to see if Doc notices.
No dramatic differences yet, so.
Real quick over on YouTube for Jay Jenkins, and I know Jay Jenkins has another question I'll get to in just a second, but since this is timely with the methylene blue, do you need the special blood test to take low-dose methylene blue?
No.
Thank you for that, Jay Jenkins. I hope that not helps that a little bit. Let's get to Bianca. Bianca's asking, what is the ApoB called on my Cleveland Heart panel? I don't see it on mine. I only see lipoprotein A. So this is on a Cleveland.
It should be. It should be on there. Sometimes because of insurances, they won't run it. You know, again, it's a Quest Lab and they file it. So for some reason, sometimes when they'll actually look at your, when they send it in, the insurance company will actually not let them run a couple of the tests. I see that sometimes with the two genetic tests we run on that too, the MTHFR and the ApoE. But the ApoB is on most of them. Certainly, if it isn't, we can do it special. It's not an expensive test if you drew it separately. But, you know, I always check it off on all my Clevelands. It's right beside the LP little a, if they did that. And if for some reason they didn't do it or your insurance won't pay for it, you know, Quest has really good cash prices on most of their labs. So you can certainly get it done. And that is an important one. To me, it's the most important measure on the lipid panel. Mm. So double check it and make sure it's not right beside your LP little a, which I hope they did. You know, maybe they didn't for some reason. But if they didn't, we could certainly order you one up. So check it and let me know.
Bianca, let me know. You can shoot me an email or let us know here in the comments, and we'll do whatever we need to do to make sure we get that ApoB on there. Let's get to let's see, where am I at? Where was Lisa? I saw Lisa. There we go. Lisa's asking, Dr. Rogers, with this big amount of weight loss, my hair is suffering terribly, which is not good for women. Please help me. What can I take or use that will make my hair grow back in and thicken it up? I take finasteride 20 milligrams and a half for about a year now and is doing nothing. Of course, I want results yesterday. What can you pull out of your little black doctor's bag for me? I love this question. Lisa, you're not alone in this.
That's a high dose of finasteride. You sure you're taking finasteride 20? Hopefully it's 2 milligrams. You don't need 20 of finasteride. Usually it's 1 milligram that that I take, and 20, you're probably not taking 20. But certainly, you know, when you, the two things that I've seen, especially in women, that cause a lot of hair loss, besides maybe having a suboptimal thyroid or a low ferritin level, iron level, have been COVID and rapid weight loss. Those are two things. But with women, it's usually we can get it growing back. You know, one thing is to look at the hormones. Again, hair loves estrogen. It's not real fond of testosterone. That's why you're taking finasteride to block down the dihydrotestosterone that can cause enlarged prostates and hair loss. But hopefully, you know, we do have that hair vitamin that has Anugaine in it. We call it happy, healthy hair. It's got the, you know, all the other stuff in it too, like the B vitamins that help. And let's see, what else are we recommending? Of course, minoxidil. Hopefully you're taking minoxidil orally. That's Rogaine. I find it works a lot better orally than it does putting the cream or foam on your hair. Nobody likes to do that anyway. So the triple play is going to be the happy, healthy hair, low-dose finasteride, and minoxidil. Mm. There's also shampoos that help. God, I'm trying to remember.
Ontogeny C.
Ontogeny C. Yeah, that's the one that we like with that. Also, a couple times a week, you know, wash your hair with a dandruff shampoo. I think that helps clear out the pores a little bit. Collagen supplements. You definitely need some collagen. And God, what is, tricks up my sleeve to make your hair thicken up a little bit. Look at your hormones for sure. You know, you really ought to get a Cleveland panel and see where you are on all the vitamins. I like vitamin E, tocotrienols. I think they help too. I like omegas.
Trying to remember what Andy was talking about a few weeks ago when he was on the show, talked a little bit about his hair regimen, which is, you know, really working well for him. So I'll try and pull that clip at some point, because that's a...
You can also use red light therapy. Yeah. I think that works pretty good. You can get a laser red light helmet. A lot of people really swear by those. As a woman, you should be able to get your hair back thicker. Yeah. There's a way. Be patient, though.
Lisa, thank you so much for that. Thank you for that question. Keep us posted on where that's at. We're going to keep following you. I'm going to get to, let's get to Steve and Shield Nutraceuticals. I have moderate plaque levels in my arteries. I've been looking into best dietary solutions to lower it. I read that there is a soft plaque which can dislodge and cause blockage, but through diet and supplements, it can be converted into the harder, more stable form of plaque. There were five things that were suggested for lowering plaque. They are pycnogenol, GoTo Cola, K2, natokinase, and niacin, and the type that may cause flushing. What are your thoughts on this stack?
I like it. You know, I certainly take pycnogenol. When my calcium scoring went from 0 to 92, you know, in a 10-year period, I'm getting a little bit of plaque in there. Again, that's hard plaque. The soft plaque, you're right, is the one that is dangerous. And really, when you get a CT calcium score, you're not sure if that plaque, that calcium, is inside or outside the artery. So it's a good test to do, but it's not foolproof. But for the soft plaque, to evaluate that, I usually like to get a carotid IMT. I'm sure you've probably had one. They come up from Atlanta a couple times a year and do them in our office. And it will identify soft plaque and kind of measure that innermost lining of your arterial walls in your carotids, which is a direct representation of what's going on in your coronary arteries as well. The one, you're right, the go-to is pycnogenol. Natokinase is a kind of a natural blood thinner. K2 is what makes the vitamin D work. It's very cardioprotective. The cola, I haven't taken that. I don't know a whole lot about that one. Niacin's an interesting compound. You know, there's recent news about niacin causing heart disease. I don't believe it. And certainly, we use it a lot of times to lower cholesterol. And certainly, I'm a believer in niacin, vitamin B3, and it has a lot of subtype spinoffs like niacinamide, which is the non-flushing type of niacin, which will not lower your cholesterol, but it does have some longevity effects. Think of nicotinamide riboside and NMR. They're both forms of vitamin B3. And if you do take the niacin, because it flushes everybody, you'll get the over-the-counter 500 milligrams of it, and you'll take one pill and think you need to go to the emergency room, you're having anaphylaxis. You're not. But the way I do it is start out with 100 milligrams at night with your 81 milligram aspirin, and every 4 nights work your way up by another 100 milligrams until you get to a gram. Sometimes we go to 2 grams, depending on what we're looking to do. But certainly, you know, all those are beneficial, especially the pycnogenol. The other thing, of course, EDTA is, I put myself immediately on the chelator EDTA orally. You know, that's the substance. A lot of people go get IV chelation, which is very expensive, time consuming, and really illegal in the state of Tennessee for some reason. But a lot of times, in other states, you'll see the cardiologists lined up for their IV chelation. They don't want anybody to know they're doing it. But so I take a daily EDTA, you know, which I have in all my offices to, you know, lower that plaque burden a little bit. You know, it depends on, again, I don't freak out about a calcium scoring unless it's 400, 300, I start noting it. But certainly, you know, anything under 300, I don't really freak out about at all. Sometimes, you know, I had a lady today that had totally, you know, I noticed a new patient, she'd had a bypass operation and totally asymptomatic, but got a calcium scoring, which must have been over 3,000. So she goes to get it worked up, totally asymptomatic, but with a strong family history of heart disease. And she ended up having, you know, blockage in all four. So that calcium scoring saved her life. I've seen that many times. So, but yeah, take your baby aspirin, and those other supplements will help. Don't be anxious to go out and get another CT calcium in a year or two. You need to wait really 5 years or more before, some people say 10 years before you check the progress of it. But, you know, you could, if you're really worried or have a lot of risk factors, you certainly could do a CT angiogram, or, you know, do a thallium treadmill, but do those things like you're doing. I think that's a pretty good stack, Steve. So,
Steve, thank you for putting that in there. I know that's, it's a common question. And one of those, you know, concerns around the, plaque as we get older. So thank you for putting that in there. I'm going to real quickly, get to, let's see, Valerie's question. I apologize, Valerie, for skipping you there. I lost this one. Question is, my doctor prescribed thyroid medicine for me and my TSH is 4.6. My T3 and T4 were normal. I thought meds were only prescribed if the TSH was over 10. When do you prescribe meds? So this is a thyroid question. What's your thoughts on this, Doc?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I don't care about the numbers as much as I care about the symptoms. And again, normal may not be optimal. It usually isn't. Certainly a TSH of 4.6 is high, meaning your thyroid's probably underactive, you know, but, hopefully you had the most important one. And again, if Margo's listening, she's our expert in thyroid, but is a free T3. But if I'm really wanting to flesh it out, I'll get a reverse T3, I'll get TPO, you know, I'll really do a little bit more testing. And one important point, as long as we were talking about cholesterol earlier with berberine helping and all that, if you have a really high cholesterol, I've seen this several times, say out of the blue, your cholesterol all of a sudden is 300, you better look at your thyroid. Because if your thyroid's low, then it falsely elevates your cholesterol. And when you get treated for your thyroid, your cholesterol returns to normal without doing anything. Huh. I've seen that several times. So always check your thyroid. As Margo will tell you, that's so important, especially for women, that we see much more thyroid disease in than men. But certainly, you probably have at least a hypoactive thyroid. So some people that are thyroid experts, they don't even go by labs at all. They just go by your body temperature. Another great way to know if you have a suboptimal thyroid is to take your body temperature, not around when you're ovulating. If you're ovulatory, take it away from ovulation because that falsely elevates your temperature a little bit. But you can even do it the week of the period if you're having periods. But before you get out of bed, take your basal body temperature. And if it's lower than 97 on average, you've got a low thyroid. I don't care what your labs show, and you should be treated. Mm. And I like to know why somebody has a low thyroid. Is it Hashimoto's? You know, is it a nutritional deficiency like selenium or zinc or maybe iodine? So certainly in the symptoms of a low thyroid, this is important, are weight gain, fatigue, brain fog, lower body temperature, cold hands and feet, constipation, fluid retention, thinning hair, brittle nails, loss of the lateral third of your eyebrow. I can tell on TV who has a low thyroid by looking at their face. And also remember, your thyroid correlates, it interacts a lot with your cortisol and your insulin levels. So they all kind of work together. They talk to each other minute by minute. So you have to really balance all of them. But so, yeah, maybe see if you have those symptoms. And, you know, I certainly prefer the desiccated thyroid medication over the synthetic. I think I switched to women today off of levothyroxine onto Armour. Well, I like it a whole lot better. So you definitely need to look into that, especially if you're symptomatic. And again, if you're not, just follow it. Maybe get the more fleshed out lab test and just follow it and see. Because you certainly want, you know, if I'm just looking at TSH, which I don't just look at the TSH, but certainly if I'm trying to regulate your thyroid, I would like your TSH to be about 1. There's such a big range of normal that it doesn't mean a lot. And why some doctors are hesitant to treat, you know, a suboptimal thyroid, I don't know. Because normal may not mean anything. I see that all the time with low testosterone. They will, you know, if it's low, if it's 300, then normal's 300 to 1,000. A lot of doctors won't treat if you're at 305, you know, and you're having all the symptoms in the world. That's just stupidity. You need to be treated for it. But anyway, so look into it further, see what symptoms you have, get treatment. Probably, you probably do have an underactive thyroid.
Valerie, thanks for putting that in there. That's such a great question. And again, thyroid's one of the, I think I've heard you say thyroid and testosterone are some of the two most, misdiagnosed things that you're seeing, is the thyroid and low testosterone. So thank you so much for putting that in there. Let's keep going here. I want to get to as many as possible. Jay Jenkins is asking, can you take berberine long-term? Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think you can, I that's one that I take personally. I like it, again, when you take any medicines, and I qualify this as a medicine, it works. Just have your blood checked every once in a while. And certainly, if you're on other medications that could lower your blood pressure or sugars too much, then monitor it. But I know some people say take breaks from it. I really don't see a huge need to do that personally.
Jay Jenkins, thank you so much over on YouTube. We're going to keep moving here. Let's get to Heather's question on Facebook. Do you all routinely check for MTHFR gene for patients who experience recurrent pregnancy loss or infertility? My colleagues think I'm crazy with all my genetic testing and supplement use, but I am seeing a trend. How about you guys? Rob and Carl, we got some of the team in here. What's your thoughts on this, Doc?
Yeah, you're not crazy at all. I mean, that's definitely one of the first things you would check on is your MTHFR gene for people who have miscarriages, infertility. And again, Robin's the expert on infertility. If you need somebody to talk to about that, she's amazing. But yeah, I mean, it's very important. Anybody with, especially if you have two gene mutations on there, then you're way more susceptible to miscarriages. And there can be some other reasons for miscarriages as well. It needs to be fleshed out and looked at. You need to look at your homocysteine level. You need to look at all your inflammatory markers. So yeah, something's going on and you can certainly, because a lot of people have mutations on that MTHFR gene. I've got two of the bad ones myself and I treat it. I treat my high homocysteine level with, methylated B vitamins, trimethylglycine. And I certainly take an 81 milligram aspirin because I'm a little bit more predisposed to blood clots than somebody who didn't have that 677TT double mutation. So, but yeah, look at all that stuff. You're not crazy. You know, genetic testing is a big thing. You're not crazy at all. You're smart.
Heather, thank you so much for putting that in there. We're going to keep going to, I think, Jana. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Jana. Jana is asking, does compounded topical progesterone for a woman increase risk of blood clots?
No.
There we go. John, well, I hope no. That helps.
No. Well, one reason, if you use the cream, I even trust oral progesterone, you know, bioidentical progesterone, not medroxyprogesterone, but it's really one of the few forms of oral hormones that I like to use orally. Most of them I use creams or pellets, because remember, when you use a cream or a pellet, it bypasses the liver. So you don't have to worry about affecting your clotting factors. But so my answer is no.
Thank you for that question, Jana. We're going to put this up here from Betsy Jones. Betsy's asking, I have all those thyroid symptoms that you just mentioned, Doc, except the one third of my eyebrows. My TSH always comes back normal. What should Betsy kind of be looking at?
Yeah, here? I mean, normal, like I said, normal means nothing. You need to be treated, you know, but check, you know, flesh it out with the more expanded thyroid panel, try to find out why. But yeah, I don't know what your TSH, but normal doesn't mean a lot. I mean, if it's 4, it's normal. It needs to be about 1.5, 1, somewhere in there.
Thank you for that, Betsy. I hope that helps. I missed this from Sandy. I hope Sandy's still with us. What is L-citrulline? Any kind of short explanation for L-citrulline?
Yeah, well, it's an amino acid. It's one of the ones that increases nitric oxide along with L-arginine. So it's pretty helpful. A lot of people take it for many different reasons. Some guys take it for ED. But it's just a nitric oxide agonist, amino acids. You can get it over the counter. Mm.
Sandy, thank you for that. I hope you're. I'm sorry I missed you there early. Hope that helps a little bit, guys. What a show! Real quick, I'm gonna do a quick plug. Most of the vitamins we talked about tonight, you can find at performancemedicine.net/shop. You will make us the happiest people in the world if we get an order every once in a while over on the online store. We love it. We love doing it. We're expanding that online store literally as we speak. So if the super vitamin, happy, healthy hair, I believe Burberry Max was mentioned, all are on the online e-commerce store, performancemedicine.net/shop. Thank you guys for letting us talk about that. Yes, Kate, that's exactly right. Look at that. See, listen to Kate here. Shop our vitamin store, friends. Come on, guys.
Ben, are you taking Happy Healthy Hair? Your hair looks like it's growing like crazy. Maybe it's because you don't have a hat on tonight, but your hair is thick. It's not as thick as Andy's, but it is thick.
I'm not on Happy Healthy Hair, but I know my brother is. And he's a huge advocate for it. And you know what? Ike might maybe an advocate for Happy Healthy Hair.
Look at this hair he has. I mean, he's got the thickest coat of hair. I love his hair. He is so huggable.
Guys,
his hair, you love on him when you're up here.
I do.
His hair is great, isn't it?
I love Ike.
Do you like Izzy's or Ike's hair better, would you say?
I like I like cuddling with Ike. I think his hair is amazing.
Softer than
soft.
Izzy.
But Izzy's coat's so beautiful.
Yeah, well, let's take a vote here. Well, I hate to vote on. It's like voting on your kids. Which one's your favorite?
Yeah, you know? I mean, come on. They're both amazing.
You know, Fran's the only one I know who has a favorite, you know, of her kids. Don't go
away. Is this Izzy right here?